This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
I am unashamed. What about you?
So I'm back. I was gone last week to Massachusetts.
I've never been to Massachusetts.
It was my first time, and it was so funny because some of the listeners sent in a note because I mentioned that I was going to be there, and they were like, "What are you doing going behind enemy lines? I mean, you know, what's going to happen to you?" And I said, "Well, just people. You know, they invited me to come." It was really interesting though. So I mentioned it on the podcast. And it's a little bitty small church plant, and the guy's from the South, but he just felt led to he thought, you know, I can go anywhere in the South. There's, you know, church house on every corner. Well, there's a church house on every corner up there too, but they're like, it's just like Europe. They're hundreds of years old, and there's like, you know, a handful of people in everywhere.
Nobody in them.
No, they call themselves the Frozen Chosen. That's what they tell me that they were. So it was really interesting. But so, you know, we had a little fire under them. Lisa and I did our thing, and we did a podcast up there, which was pretty good. They call it Theology on Tap. They do it like in the front of a little tavern. And it was really interesting. But there were, so I mentioned on the podcast, so there were at least five or six different people. One young woman came, I think her name was Nikki. She came from Maine, Bangor, Maine, which is like a 5-hour drive. She and her little boy drove over and heard us on Sunday morning, then drove back. Mm-hmm. So, but they were all unashamed listeners. Another guy from Cape Cod, some guy from 2.5 hours away. So I know you guys listen. So I had a great time with you guys. And look, Unashamed Nation is just all over the place. You think about it just being a bunch of rednecks, but
we baptized five yesterday. The artist baptized them. And after they heard the message, and I went from I got your notes, Al, the parable of the sower.
Yep.
And just told them that is like, when you read that is exactly the format.
And you
some don't get it. They say, get the Bible out of my face, give you a cursing, and they leave. Every once in a while, 25, 30 years later, they'll show back up and say, I was wrong.
Right.
I cursed you for trying to tell me about Jesus. And I thought, well,
you got to get a good cussing first.
Yep, you need to get a good cussing. I said, well, I didn't hold against you. I said, look, I'd actually forgotten who you were. I said, but now that you're back, how old were you when you came down here? Well, I was 19. I said, how old are you now? I said, well, 44. And I said, well, you know, your face seems a little familiar, but I've forgotten you. I didn't know. He said, well, I just want to let you know I'm back. I was wrong.
I had a little bit of a, so there was the guy that invited me. He had put it on his Facebook that we were going to be meeting for this podcast, and he got a note back from somebody, I guess, that follows him. I don't know exactly how Facebook works, but it said, why in the world are we having a homophobic anti-woman person up here talking about me? I was like, you don't even know me.
You had to explain to him you were married to a woman.
Well, yeah, I love women. I one in particular. I'm not anti-women. Good grief.
And anti-woman.
So, homophobic. They didn't call me a racist, so I guess that was, at least they left that off.
But all you men out there that try to convince me that you're a woman, I'm not anti you. I'm just saying you're a bit confused with biology.
So
I don't hate you, but trust me when I tell you, when a man claims he's a woman, that's one step too far. You call that, I think, depravity?
Well, confused is right. So that's a perfect lead in to introduce our guest. So we sent out Jace, as we do from time to time, just to gather stories. So this time we actually sent him out of the country.
He's in Greece.
And so there is no telling when he gets back what all has happened to Jace.
I looked there, Corinth and Athens was right around there. Mm-hmm. Then I just saw Corinth was right below Athens right there.
Yeah.
On the coast right there.
Well, when we were there filming for the movie, we were driving, and it was so surreal because you're driving on their version of interstate, and I look up, and it says Corinth, you know, exit 53.
Yeah.
And I was like, Corinth. I mean, it's like, you know, you just don't expect to see that when you're driving down
the
road.
Just think about the clientele there that the Apostle Paul was working with. Let's face it, it was a pretty wild place. He was there at all them ships coming through there with all these, you know, the ship landings and produce and whatever they were shipping, you know. But it was a happening place there.
Oh, it was a buzz.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah,
and Athens was no more on the intellectual side, but Corinth was the commerce. I mean, it was all the fishing business and all that.
I'm really looking forward to hearing a Jay's report on Corinth. No, surely the history of the church has to be there somewhere.
Oh, it'll be a good one.
He won't run out of stories.
No, but look, we're not. Me and the nurse man here, by the way, are
so we have Jay today. Stone. Let me officially introduce. We have Jay Stone sitting in Jace's seat, so I expect him to be.
Now I'm not near as smart or as intellectual as Jace is, but I promise you, I will let you talk, and I will not talk over you.
It was so funny when I was in Massachusetts. The guy was like. This guy listens to our podcast. He was describing it to someone else who hadn't listened. He said, yeah, it took me a little while to get used to the way they talk over each other. And I was like, he said, but once I figured out that's just the way they do it, I was fine. Oh, yeah. So it was just, we're kind of rude. So Chad is our nurse man. Everybody's got a nickname.
That's right. Yeah.
Or a last name. So, Chad, you're Nurseman.
Nurseman.
Because you are a nurse.
Nurse practitioner.
Nurse practitioner. Yep. And so every entourage has to have a certain skill set, right, Dad? I mean, if you're going to have people around.
Well, the way we view it, in 1750 through about 1800, along in there, when they were selling the country, if you had the particular skill set that Chad has right now, you made no bones about it. You're a doctor.
Right.
You know enough to where in our mind, you're a doctor.
I haven't seen
I had a knot on my leg, and I said, that thing bothers me. And I showed it to the nurse man, because you show that to doctors. But to me, he was top of the heap. So
he's the only one in your sphere.
He said, I get it a couple of days. I come down there, we'll take that out. So a couple of days later, he said, put your leg up here on the table. I laid my leg up on the table, you know. And he said, let's see here. Took a magic marker and drew a circle. I said, that's unusual. I said, I've never seen a doctor with a knife in one hand and a magic marker in the other. I said, hey, maybe he knows what he's doing. He made a circle, and he did follow that line right perfect.
So
he just cut a round plug and just pulled the fatty tid, what do you call them?
What was it?
A little cyst is all it was. Cyst. A little subcutaneous cyst, you know?
Yeah.
So he just made a circle around it and then lifted the meat out and sewed it back up about five or six little stitches, you know. Came back a couple of weeks and cut them out.
So Chad,
I asked him, I said, you want me to numb it? And he said, no, I think I better numb it. You know, this is going to not be good.
Oh, so you did.
Maybe you need to numb
it. I mean, it was a circle about the size of a nickel. And I thought, well, you know, I'd take anything. It ain't going to be that bad.
I don't know. You cut a nickel out of me. I want some. What about you, Jay?
That's right.
I mean, it was a nickel worth of flesh that left there, but I was prepared to just suck it up and say, oh, no.
You know, Phil's got a reputation for not taking any kind of painkiller or not ever being put to sleep for anything.
Any kind of tablets, period.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't going to be known
for
torturing Phil.
You get past that Omega XL, and then I'm saying, no, you done gone too far. Fish oil, okay. What about this? You know, urea, yeah. I said,
What about blood-eating pills? They tried to get you on that for a while.
What are you talking about? I tried it, and I got down to the last one in the bottle, and I said, it's goodbye to you and who, wherever the rest of you in the trash can that went. I said, that is the roughest thing I've ever done. Take a pill a day, some kind of blood eating. They said I got too much blood in me, you know, which I don't know. It's debatable, but that's what they say.
Depends on who you ask.
Well,
I said, Doc, who's the one that came up with and said how much you're supposed to have?
Yeah.
I said, where'd that come from? And he was looking at me. I said, who dreamed that up? On they know how much each individual on planet Earth, how much blood they're supposed to have. You know, and he said, research. I said, research. I said, so a bunch of researchers got together and decided, like it's looking at a car engine, they've got a you know, you pull that stick out of your engine, you look down there, and they say he's supposed to have this much. Well, they said they got that figured out with a human being when it comes to blood. I'm just not all in on that.
So they had some sort of dipstick measuring that with.
Well, yeah, you give them about this much blood in a little vial, and some woman walks off with it. She walks back in there, and she'll say, 48. And I'm like, 48. I said, what should it be? And she said, 45. So you're 3 points high.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes you go in there, they say 51. Ooh, got to get some blood out. I said, well, people in the Himalaya Mountains and Eskimos, they have more blood than us, right? How do they get more blood and they're still Cadillacing? And they said, well, higher elevation. They said, your problem is you're not an Eskimo and you don't live in the Himalayas. Yeah.
Do you know what those numbers mean, Chad?
Oh, yeah.
What do they mean?
I'm following him, but, you know.
What is that 48, the level? What?
That's at your hematocrit. They go off your hemoglobin and your hematocrit, depending on how much you got in your body. And if you got too much, on average, the world average, I guess, is what they're looking at, 12 to 14. Well, if you got around 15 to 17, some people got to get it drawed off.
So my question was, what if I don't do anything, especially take these pills? What if I don't do it?
Well, they say it's risk for, you know, heart attack or strokes. Too thick, you know.
Which would thicken your heart.
13% higher chance.
And you're not exactly a heart-healthy eater.
I would think I am. I eat deer. And I eat chicken, and like Clint Eastwood before me, fried.
So, Chad, I got to know. So you've had patients, you know, because you at one time you worked at two different hospitals. Uh-huh. And so you see a lot of people. So where does a person like Dad, how does he fit into, you see people every day with illnesses, and obviously they're coming in. You do a lot of ER stuff, so mm-hmm. a lot of it's, you know, trauma stuff. But how does Dad rate on a patient scale of...
I'm 75, so what about 75
just in general.
People like Phil just come in dead. They just don't go nowhere until they die. Come in, okay, yeah. And what do you do?
And you've seen a few, right? They're not going to come in.
You couldn't tell them that there was something wrong with them or they was dying if a car hit them. They wouldn't listen to you.
I've always thought that was the case. That was, but I had to hear it from a medical person.
Confirmation. Yeah, right.
I just have numerous, but there's a few Bible texts that says 70 if you're lucky and 80 if you have the strength.
And you're 75.
I'm 75. Right. So someone says, well, you better start taking all this medicine. Because if you don't, you're going to die. I said, oh, let me give you a newsflash. I'm 75. Yeah. I'm going to die physically. I said, I'm more into the resurrection of the dead than the doctor's pills. They said, well, this here keep you alive and, you know, a long time. I'm like, not that much longer. I said, I'm 75. I said, my day is coming up probably a little quicker than 65, 55, 45, 25. Or somebody five. So the bottom line is physical death without the resurrection. I say this with all sincerity. I have nothing wrong with the medical profession, but I trust the God of the Bible more than I do the medical profession.
Yeah,
I'm just, my hands, I feel like are in His hands,
right?
Not theirs.
And I feel the same way, and always have, which is, that was my approach to the pandemic. I was like, okay, I want to protect people, and I don't want old people to get sick and die if they don't, you know, are worried about it. But I never was worried. I didn't worry about any of it. I didn't spend 1 minute
worrying. I sit here at 75. You say, did you wake up this morning and have any kind of headache, cold, ache, a backache, a pain in your... No. Absolutely none.
There you go.
So, you know, I'm 75. You say, well, how long will you go? I said, I don't know. But if I made it this far with very few pills taken...
You're not going to change it, right?
I'm just thinking, just, why not just ride it away?
You're just like Mom. Yeah. Let's take a break. So I was mentioning my recent trip to Massachusetts, which is a very blue state. So I definitely saw a lot more left wingers than I normally see, which is kind of interesting because as a conservative person, I kind of like going in, seeing, you know, how they operate. And of course, we were there on Columbus Day, and some woman came by and screaming out of the car, "Happy Indigenous People Day!" You know, just up and down. And I was like, "All right, whatever."
Yeah, okay.
So sometimes you have to go with it. So one of our sponsors is a company called Patriot Mobile, and what's interesting about them is that, you know, they're obviously they are a phone carrier, but they're a conservative company, and you just don't see many of those in this world because there's some big conglomerates. But boy, they fund a lot of things that we don't like. And so they call themselves the only Christian conservative wireless provider, which is pretty good. So they're going to support the things that we support. And so if you're thinking about a change, looking for a change, they're definitely ones you want to check out because they share your values. Go to patriotmobile.com/Phil, or you can call them at 972-PATRIOT. Get free activation with the offer code PHIL, and they always have special discounts for veterans and first responders. So patriotmobile.com/Phil, or you can call them 972-PATRIOT. Check these guys out. His mom never takes pills, right, Dad?
Yeah, what are you talking about? He's a walking pharmaceutical.
So Jay, tell us, tell our audience, and it was interesting the way that Chad got here, because I will say this.
Oh, yeah.
Chad, I mean, he is not a one-trick pony.
No.
No.
The medical side is just a bonus. I mean, this man can do a lot of different things, right? Well, so tell how he got here.
It's good that he is medically trained because our hunting crew, as they say, is getting long in the tooth. So it's good to have a guy around that knows what he's doing medically. But the way it all happened was perfect because Burl, I'm sure the audience has heard a few Burl stories.
We actually,
Burly Dane.
We actually showed, didn't we show the deer cam picture of Burly that we thought it was Sasquatch?
Yeah.
But it could have been a Sasquatch, but it was actually Burly.
Yeah, he looked like a Sasquatch.
Yeah. No, yeah.
So Burl comes up.
And he's a nurse.
Yep. Burl is a nurse and worked at the same hospital as Chad. Right. And Burl said, "Oh, a friend of mine in the hospital, you know, I'd love to bring him down here and carry him hunting." And we're real skeptical of when Burly wants to bring somebody hunting because the odds of that human being, I would say, safe with a shotgun is what we're looking for is not, 50-50.
And we don't not many people will hunt with us. I mean, it's just kind of our little sanctuary.
Yeah, you got to be vetted.
It's hard to get in.
Yep. It's a dangerous game we play, but so anyways, Burl brings Chad and, we get to talking. I thought he seems like a pretty good old boy. He comes again. Everybody likes him. He's a nurse practitioner. Miss Kay needed something done, and he fixed her up. And
you burned yourself somehow, and you called me up. I don't know if you remember that or not, but you burned yourself. You called me up, said, "Hey, I need something for this burn."
Oh, I burned myself.
Yeah,
oh, that's right. Yeah. I remember that.
You burned yourself.
So anyways, we got to be friends. And I thought to myself, well, this hand here is a way more valuable character than Burly is.
So Burly brings him, and then Chad has replaced Burly now as our medical guy.
And now
Burly's only here part time.
That's right. Burly lives in Colorado, and he comes during hunting season. And me and Chad, we're just regular run of the mill, hard working, God fearing country boys, We love to get out, work the land, and sow seeds.
Yeah,
and
a lot of sowing.
We like to watch the deer herd grow. We're trying to manage the deer herd. It's been about 4 years in the making now. Things are looking up. He passed on an 8-point this morning to shoot Phil a little doe.
I had orders from headquarters this morning to get some meat.
That's it. We call that
tender.
We call that the deer tithe.
That's right. You always.
Well, they've done a great job but I was wondering. At some point back in the past, I said, "When are these younger bucks going to step up and help me out with all the?"
You were the complete land manager for the first 20 plus years.
You've got the food aspect.
Yep.
If you're going to have a bunch of property and you're a hunter, you come up with stuff that deer like to eat.
Yep.
Our squirrels, our ducks. So you've got the food regime,
right?
On what you're going to plant. a lot of things the Almighty plants it. So you look at it and you say, good night, that's Spranglethop, that's smart weed. Mm-hmm. You know, that's nutshead, that's ducks eat that, deer like that. So you have to ascertain what you want to add to that to help the food situation for everybody involved over there. Coons got to eat like all the rest of them. So it said it went from coon to squirrels to ducks to deer, you know, whatever. Coyotes, hogs, you like, which one we going to feed, which one we call the undesirables. So the food regime, then the duck blind regime or deer stand. I mean, you look at the deer stands and the duck blinds over 1,600 acres. I mean, it's a lot of work to get all them mm-hmm. put in the right spots. Food plots are not food plots and feeders and, you know, coons, coon-proof feeders. We got some of them, you know, coons are trying to, one of them the other day on that one that Phyllis and Tony hunted, she said the coons tried everything they could to get over in that deer feeder. She said, we know that feeds there, we just can't get in there. So somebody had a master stroke and built a thing that a coon can't get in. Well, that's good luck. Yeah. Finally, one, a coon got out there and got on a limb on a tree over there above it, but the limb started giving way on him before he got out on the end of it. He falls and hits the ground. He's like, no, can't get in it from the top.
Well, that's but good they to were know trying. It's working.
That's right.
Well, and that's, I mean, you're right, Dad. But
they helped me with all these. They fooled with the deer side of it.
Well, and for all those years,
food, duck food.
For all those years, it was mainly just ducks for you and us.
Yep.
And then Jay has kind of ushered in, and now with Chad helping with the whole deer management side of it. So it's, I mean, what would you say is the state of the our property now, Jay? I mean, it's.
I would say it's a paradise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a paradise. Everything looks really good. With
what all did you plant? What all was planted this year?
Well,
you planted rice?
For ducks.
For everything, yeah.
For ducks, it's a pretty cool story. We had rice flown in with an airplane at 2 inches of backwater. And I'm talking to my buddy Brad, who's a farmer up in Arkansas. He yep. step by
rice
step.
Farmer.
Here's what you do. Here's what you do. So I followed it to a T. We had the rice flown in 2 inches of backwater. Well, we got Phil. It came up with the scheme to pump the water out of there. The only way we could get it out was to back that tractor down there and pump it out because the silt had done got so bad
over the years.
The only way to get it out was pump it out. So we got the water off of it just in time. And a week later, we went out there and I said, good night. Look at that. That's the prettiest crop of rice I've ever seen in my life. But unbeknownst to us, me, it was Spangletop. It was not rice.
Ah, so it's natural.
But it only came up where he dropped the rice out of the airplane.
We thought it was rice.
Yeah.
In other words, you just get water within this far of the mud.
Yeah.
Well, I go down and pump it, and I'd go check after every night. It's about the fourth night I went up there to get that 2 inches out of there. I just kept pumping. We had to dig a hole, that old Pungo pump, back in the back of a tractor. Finally, I saw mud and saw more mud. I said, it's about 65% to 70% silt, mud, mm-hmm. muck. And I said, the rest of it's a little bit pools of water here and there. Stone said, let her do it. I think a lot of it was rice, but we didn't realize the wrath that was coming up on us.
Oh.
And you can tell that story.
Well, so, and also we had the prettiest stand of Japanese millet down that pipeline you've ever seen, from one end to the other, solid millet.
Is that something you plant as well?
Yes, we planted that with the track side by side with a broadcaster on the back of it. We planted that in the muck. So when you plant something in the muck, you don't have to fertilize it. It's rich, fertile soil, and it comes up really fast. So a lot of moisture. So 3 days go by. I go back out there to check it, and it ain't there. That millet.
He saw it when it was this high.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Just
he's showing, for those of you listening, that's about 3 or 4 inches he was showing.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I go out there and check it. No, Dan calls me and says, you planted your millet too thick. It's gone. I said, do what? He said, is it gone?
Yeah, he
said,
yes, gone. I thought they planted it too thick. You get it too thick, so much of it comes up, it's too tight.
Too thick.
Too tight. So I'm like, no. I said, is it yellow, brown? What is it? He said, no, it's gone. Like, it's gone. I said, you see any army worms? He's like, oh, we didn't look for army worms. So I get in the truck, run out there. I look, and I look on the ground. I see two of them crawling, holes everywhere. The army worms ate, what, 25 acres in 3 days.
Good yep. grief.
During the rains. So all that crop gone. So
speaking of regimes, somebody just fired up something outside.
That's Jimmy Red Gibson, who's one of those.
I was going to say, what in the world is that? Somebody running a chainsaw.
Well, he had a cigarette hanging out of his mouth. He was working on that axe.
Well, he made the cut because he has a skill set. Got to have a skill set for everything. He can drive a bulldozer, a track hoe. He can put axles in four-wheelers in 15 minutes.
Which is what he was doing out there.
He put an axle out. I said, Red got a couple of axles. One of them axles was going. I said, put one in there. So he went out there, and I saw him all ago. He was, but so he's a man of many talents.
Yeah, he's like Red. He's ironically.
Mechanic, heavy equipment operator, somewhat of a philosopher. But if you drove by his house, you would not stop and say, I think I'd just walk in there and tell him. No.
You wouldn't slow down.
Speed up.
Let's take another break. So we talk a lot on this podcast about sleep, mainly because Jace loves to sleep, but he doesn't sleep a lot. He says he only sleeps about 5 hours, but then Missy loves,
every time I go over there, he's asleep.
Exactly. And he says he only sleeps 5 hours at night, but I think he's sleeping during the day.
During the day.
I think that's what's happening. He's a day sleeper when he's not doing his.
I just thought of the unmerciful idea of watching the stock market for hours every day. And that will put you to sleep.
No wonder he needs his rest. Yeah. One of our sponsors is a company called Helix Sleep. And Jace and I both have several of their mattresses, and we love it. Jace went online, took the quiz, and you match it to your sleep, what you like to do. Mm-hmm. He's a side sleeper. You know, everybody has their different ways that they like to sleep. We really love it. And so we want you to check these guys out. Go to Helix, H-E-L-I-X, sleep.com/unashamed. And you're going to take a 2-minute sleep quiz. They'll match you to your customized mattress. They have a 10-year warranty. You get to try it for 100 nights, risk-free. So that's a third of a year. But you're going to love it. And they'll pick it up if you don't love it. Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners. Unashamed at helixsleep.com/unashamed. That's helixsleep.com/unashamed. $200 off and free pillows.
Well, he's like the Red on Shawshank Redemption. He's a man who knows how to get things. He knows how to get things.
It's turning loose.
The only problem is they ain't his.
But other you say, well, how do you get a man to be that, to do all of the work where they put, he fixed that, put that axle in a while ago. Well, if you'd had to take it up there to the four-wheeler place and all that, for an axle, probably, $600, $700, $800, something, whatever, to replace that. But I walked by and gave him a little check there, because he's the one down there. We're making a new duck hole. You haven't seen that yet, Al. Mm-mm. We actually made two of them. One of them's on a little slough, the Twin Oaks duck hole. It's a new one, brand new. We just thinned out a little timber along the edge of a little creek. We're going to dam it up. It's already got the dump on it and all that. We're going to flood that. Last year I saw it. I've been seeing it the last 4 or 5 years, just wood ducks by the scads, just loaded up. So it's a wood duck spot. The other one we're trying to get for big ducks, we're cleaning out all the thin brush and all that old thick brush, undesirables, privets, swamp, plants. We're doing them and where we just leave big timber where grass are growing there. So that's part of the sowing.
Well, planting. It's a beautiful thing. Big trees, big virgin timber.
We're copying what I saw 53 years ago north of here, about 50 miles. My brother and I, me and Tommy, walked out there we were Louisiana Tech students. And we asked some old guy where the ducks were, and he said, up on the prairie. And we found out later that the Germans came in and cut them trees for whiskey barrels, put them on barges, went all the way down through Jonesville, and come in to Chaffalaya. They came up that way to get all the way up here. back in the 30s. That's when they cut that. But they cut it and they spaced out them trees. And when we pulled up there with 10,000 ducks just raining down on that thing, it was at Spangle Top. Water was about that deep, 8 inches deep. And I said, this looked like it's illegal to hunt here. I said, good.
Tonight. It probably is now.
Yeah, well, it is. Yeah. Now you can't set foot on it.
Wherever you kill a bunch of ducks, the government shuts it down.
It's the government, boys.
Oh, yeah.
The government bought it. So I'm trying to recreate that same image with the scattered overcup, with the scattered oak.
Yeah.
So we're taking out all them things, and I'm going to make a place. It's about probably 25, 30 acres in the middle of the woods. The Spangle Top will come up on its own. We'll monitor to see if ducks can eat it, because I'll see it next spring when the backwater, from the backwater finally comes and goes. We'll look out there, and whatever the Almighty planted, if ducks can eat it, we'll leave it.
Right.
If it's undesirables and not duck food, we'll disc it up and plant something that ducks eat. So,
well, we got a pretty good food regime going this year. But so going back to the army worms. So the army worms decimated everything that we planted for ducks, decimated it. So
almost overnight.
Has that ever happened before?
3 days. Yeah. They've got us before.
Okay.
But oh, yeah.
Phil had a bunch of corn get.
I had a corn field, and I checked it two to three days later, see how my corn was doing. Had a little rain. We pulled up there, and the guy that planted it with me, we looked, and it was just a bare field. Huh. Well, when we left it, it was about 8 inches tall, the corn. So I said, is this the spot we planted the corn? He said, this is the spot. I said, well, the last time, 3 days ago, this was solid corn from one end to the other. It was a pretty good size swath there. And I thought, where'd the corn go? I said, surely the deer didn't eat every stalk. I mean, it wasn't like three stalks on the head. No, it was obliterated.
Yep.
Right. So we got out there, and the guy, his dad was a farmer, and he went out there and scratched around the dirt, and he come back, and he showed me them army worms. He said, army worms. I said, they ate all that corn within the last 3 days? Mm. He said, oh, they can do it overnight.
No, they moved through there like an army and just decimate it.
We sprayed it, and I didn't try that anymore. I didn't try corn that year. I planted it with something else, but I learned a lesson about army worms. They can decimate a crop overnight.
So when you read in the Old Testament, when something would come through there and wipe all the crops out, how it happens.
That is real. So you start adding it all up. You say, okay, that one's gone. Let's replant something. So that's the food regime. Mm-hmm. Then your duck blinds, getting them brushed, make sure they'll float, the floaters, and the ones that are in the thickets where the water comes over them. We'll refurbish them, some boards right out. We use all treated stuff, but that backwater is rough. Beavers will come in, and where you sat in a duck blind, six men in a thicket, 2x12, you're standing on 2 2x12s down at the bottom, and you're sitting on 1 2x12 like a football bleacher. But we came in the other day, I checked one of them, and the beavers had eaten the whole top 2x12. Mm-hmm. I mean, where you sit, the beavers ate it all. I'm like, I don't guess it gave them indigestion, the stuff to treat the timber. They ate the whole thing.
The 2x12s ain't cheap these days.
Mm. Yeah.
But now going back to that army worm deal. So the army worms got our crops. So we decided not to replant because it was late, just to go in there and bush hog and hope the Almighty sees fit to replace it with something that duck seed.
And he did.
Well, lo and behold, the army worms ate all the rice in the loaves. Well, guess what come up? Spangle Top. Oh. The army worms ate all the millet on the higher ground. You know what came up? Purple millet. Natural millet.
Purple head. Good millet.
The better than Japanese millet.
Yeah. Yep.
So wherever the army worms got us, the Almighty saw fit to bless us with the real stuff.
Well, that's pretty
good. Almighty's grain crops are resilient against army worms.
That's right.
They won't eat his. Mm. He's got something in there, they won't eat them.
Yeah.
But if you take something off the market and you buy the seed and you go over there, rice and all this stuff, your it's the chances are you making a crop It's pretty tough. Some years you make it, but most years not.
Well, it's interesting because you're
like a plague.
You're planting crops that people eat, that they feed farm animals, and all that kind of stuff. So obviously, it's a whole different ballgame. Mm. But you know, would you have ever thought, any of y'all, that you would turn into farmers one day?
No,
I mean,
no.
In essence, that's what you are now, is you're farmers.
That's right.
You know, but you're farmers for game.
Being a real farmer.
Mm-hmm. And your income depended on all. Think about
that's
you,
right.
You know, that
your livelihood
to feed
we
your
do
family.
Everything but harvest it. The harvesting takes place when the ducks come.
Right. Yeah.
They eat it. We're planting them food. So they'll say, well, let's try that. That's pretty good food supply over there.
Right.
And they start to gather up over there, you know. So we hit and run. We hunt them here one day. We don't hunt there the next day. We move a mile away. We hunt way down there. Mm-hmm. Well, after we hunt that a day, we're watching all the time. Well, then we move over there. So every day is trying to outsmart them on right. where you're going to hit them, because the more you hunt them, the scarier they get. So it's just.
Well, and that's another big change. Let's take another break. So one of the things we talked about really liking Chad is he's a man who's wide open, kind of like the rest of us, right? So he's a man who likes to go wide open. Because slow is just right if you're on vacation, a sloth, or you're describing QuickBooks.
That's right.
That's slow. They should call it slow books, right? So one of our new sponsors is a company called NetSuite, and they offer a much better bookkeeping apparatus for you to be able to use over places like QuickBooks, which aren't that quick. They suck you in a slow manual process. You make the switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one financial system because it gives you visibility and control of all your own financial inventory, HR, e-commerce, everything that you're going to need. 93% of surveyed businesses increase their visibility and control when they switched to NetSuite. So you want to try these guys out. It's NetSuite, NetSuite.com/Phil. Right now, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind financing program only for those ready to make the switch today. So that's special financing at NetSuite.com/Phil. That's another big change, Dad, because back in the day, we didn't have any property. And so we at least what now is the core over at Franklin's, which is our next door neighbor down there.
Yep.
And we leased the pothole is what we called it. But we hunted there every day because that was the only place we had to hunt.
That's correct.
I mean, that or Cypress Creek.
It's called burning it out. It's too much gunfire.
That's right. And, you know, so you would have a day where they'd come through and you'd get them on a flight. But it wasn't like they were staying here. Remember? I mean, you'd go.
Stone started working with the deer management idea. And it's about the fourth year or so.
Yeah.
But we saw it, you know, used to, if you put a food plot out there, you know, a little old small plot, you know, you look out there late in the evening, you might see two or three deer show, may not see any. But now, on the average, when y'all go out there, they see 30, 40, 50. They're seeing bucks walk around in broad daylight.
Well, what about you had the hunt with BK and Sai, because the veterans and the youth can hunt early here with a gun.
Oh, yeah. In Louisiana, there's a week, usually 3 weeks before rifle season opens, that they allow youth and veterans to hunt with a rifle.
Which is great. I love that.
Oh, yeah. The deer, they don't have their guard up quite yet. But I found out this morning it's up now. No. They know something's going on. A bullfrog done wreaked havoc over there. Yeah. So
his 13-year-old daughter has killed more big bucks than most grown men.
That's exactly right.
She's little Miss Dead Eye and no shaking and like, you know, I'm nervous. No, she just leans down, you know.
Well, she was gonna meet us at the beach last week. 13 years old, you know. And so before she came down, she went hunting with her dad and shot a big old 6-point.
Oh yeah, about a 7-year-old bruiser, probably 110-inch 6-point. I mean, it's giant 6-point.
And she told me
a true trophy.
She's a classic Robertson because I said, well, your dad got a 9-point on the same hunt. She said, yeah, but mine was 230 pounds. Yeah. His wasn't even 200.
Well, for Stone's pass.
So the competition was there.
The Almighty did on behalf of Stone, and he did the same thing with the nurse man because of their past shenanigans. He gave both of them a house full of little girls.
Little girls.
That's it.
And they said, good night. It's like a plague that had come upon them. No little boys on take duck on. So they looked up, and one of the little girls
stepped up. To me, too. Yeah.
One of them stepped up, and all of a sudden we find out this little girl is a deer slayer.
That's right.
So Stone was like, well, it could have been worse. But.
At least you got to get one killer out of the group.
I am truly blessed.
She bakes cakes and gets them ready for you, you know, and it's the oldest. She'll get her name. We'll put a little whipped cream, you know. But she actually bakes. Miss K taught her how to cook, make baked cakes.
BK.
So she's a deer slayer. She cooks. So she's a prize catch.
She's super unique because her two sisters, her younger sister and her older sisters, are major drama queens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're just, you know.
But no cooking and
typical girls. No. They're just typical girls.
Yeah.
And although Sage is, you better watch her because she'll come up and slug you. She's one of them kind of kids that catch you without looking, you know.
By the way, there's an undertow movement going on out there in these United States of America. They've tried everything else, but they finally reached down into the hunting world. But there are more and more females beginning to hunt, whether it be ducks, deer, whatever, you know, fish, hunt or fish.
Yeah.
So there's still hope for America.
Which I'm saying, bring it on. That's great. Mm-hmm. The more the merrier. The more hunters you get, the better. Phyllis loves it. I mean, she didn't get to hunt her whole life. And so
yesterday they scouted Phyllis and the artist she married. You know, he's an artist. He's got these artwork. You can see it on the internet.
But TonyThomasArt.com.
Yeah, they just sat there. And they said they just watched, and the deer came right out, and they were the one telling me about the coons. She said one skunk and one coon played around out there for a couple hours, you know, but then a few deer showed up. So they came back all excited, you know, like, boy, I tell you what, old Stone put us on a hot hole.
it's a classic Robert's a woman because she told me, she said, I mean, the last time they were talking about going hunting, she was just chewing Tony out about being too noisy in the blind. And she was like, if you can't be quiet, just stay home.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, there you go. That sounds like a Robert's.
Well, that's what it's about for me. You know, our families, our wives get together and they have a good time together. Our kids, they play good together. But when I come down here, you know, I do get away from the hospital, but also, you know, you get in the woods, but you're around guys where, you know, the Bible says iron sharpens iron.
That's right.
And to me, you know, seeing these Bible studies and seeing how engulfed in the word that y'all are, it's an inspiration to me to, you know, try to better myself as a Christian father and a Christian man, and to do better for myself and for my family. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, I enjoy coming down here so much. You know, not only do I get to work the land and be a part of that, but, you know, once again, iron sharpens iron, you know.
You know, and that's I was going to bring this up, and this is what we'll talk about in our last segment, because you, I mean, that's, it's not a requirement that you're a godly man when you come here, but it's a requirement if you're going to stay around that you're going to become one. That's all we do is God and the Bible. And you're a deacon at a church right close to where we live, where Jay and I live. Yeah. Great church. I love Greg, your pastor. Yeah. He's one of my, except for being an Alabama fan. I mean, which I told him, everybody has to have something,
that's right.
And that's his one
Chad's
flaw.
Also
we have three or four from Alabama. Yesterday we baptized, but they came all the way over here. I said, I forgive you of all things, including, you know, being all in for old Saban. I said, Saban met his match. I said, I never thought that, you know, the old guy Jimbo out there at A&M would be.
Now, we love you Roll Tide people out there, because we know we got a ton of them that listen to the podcast, so we just have to gig you just a little bit.
That's it. Yeah. But no, Chad is a young buck, too, compared to the rest of us.
Yeah.
You know, he's only in his mid-30s.
Right.
And, you know.
Which, by the way, I don't know a lot of deacons that are your age, so that says something about your character and your maturity.
Well, his work ethic, he works.
Is he
his
at
tail
the millennial
off.
Age?
No. I think he's one above millennials.
Yeah,
he doesn't have one.
Cut off is. I don't claim him.
Yeah. No,
I've lost.
Millennials didn't lay a glove on the nurse man.
No. He's a go-getter. Let's take our last break. So I wanted to talk a little bit about, since we've been talking about, you know, working the ground. We were in, I don't know where Zach took you guys last week, Dad, but we were in Matthew 13 somewhere,
And I wanted to talk a little bit about it because if you notice, every parable that Jesus talks about here has something to do with what we all love to do, which is really interesting. I mean, it's a farming. Most of it is farming because he talks about the weeds and all that. But even the fishing, because he has one about the nets. Yep. There's one about treasure hunting, which, you know, Jace is big into that. We're not as much the rest of us. But the thing is, kind of what Chad mentioned a minute ago, Jesus begins this sort of new style of teaching when you get to this point. Like up until this point, he's just been talking about the kingdom, straightforward, same stuff John the Baptist was talking about. Here's what the kingdom, but now all of a sudden.
Just remember, this is just prior to him saying, you turn two pages or so, three pages, and you're aware from that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, chief priests, and teachers of the law. Well, three chapters earlier, he's arguing with them. He's talking about the Lord of the Sabbath, enter through the narrow gate, starting about chapter 5. But he's preparing them for what it's like to live as the kingdom of God on earth. But the motivation is not there yet.
Right.
But and they're arguing with him. You're doing what you're doing by the power of the devil and the parable of the sower. He said most people don't get it. Their hearts are hard. He was pointing to them. Yep. He said their hearts are hard. But all these things are leading up to the announcement.
Right.
Look, I'm fixing to save the world by my death on the cross. 3 days later, I'll be raised from the dead. When he said that, the disciples just looked around like, what? They had no idea that he was actually going to do this.
Right.
No, but the announcement didn't come to about midway.
No, I agree. And I think this the reason, because there's a reason why he started using parables. He hadn't done it up to this point. And he's just like, literally like he's looking around him.
Yeah.
And you're seeing stuff that's going on. He's making these spiritual application, but the, you know, people are like, what's he talking about? And especially the leaders, they don't even know. So I think the whole reason was because now you got the opposition, which is what Dad's talking about. And then you got people who say they're on board, but for all the wrong reasons. They're seeing physical Israel rising.
Think about it, Al. He said to him, he heals a guy on the Sabbath. And they got all fired up about it. When he did that, here's a guy with a shriveled up hand. He'd been that way all of his life. He runs up on Jesus. Jesus heals him. Check this out. He was completely restored, just as sound as the other. But this was in chapter 12, right prior to what you're talking about, the parable of the sower. But the Pharisees went out and plotted how they may kill Jesus. You're like, are they ever missing it?
Yeah.
But not realizing that by them killing him, which they did,
right,
it saves the world, including them, if they would repent, like in the book of Acts, said, you kill the author of life. And they're like, oh my goodness, what are we going to do? They were cut to the heart. You mean by murdering him, it was going to save us? Peter said, now you got it.
Right.
They were just devastated.
Yeah.
And well, about 3,000 were baptized that day and the kingdom started. It's an amazing story.
It ended up the ante. And then I even think that last little bit he adds in there, Matthew does about his family, shows you how much opposition he was really facing at this point. Because even his own family didn't get it. You know, they were like, they thought
even miracles wouldn't work.
No. In fact, it hadn't worked.
You know?
And he's fixing to go through a whole series in the next chapter where he talks about how these, you know, places that should have been listening to him, but the hearts were bad. And so I think that's the purpose of the parable, is to get to the hearts. And it's interesting because in the parable of the sower, that's exactly what you're looking at, is different hearts. Soil.
I've watched it for the last 50 years presenting the gospel, and all I'm doing is waiting on the response to see what it's going to be. Most of them, when they hear the message about the kingdom and they don't understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what was sown in their heart. This is a seed sown along the path. You say, in my work over the last 50 years when I came to Jesus and I presented Jesus to people because it affected me so much, you say, overall, the largest group by far says, nope.
Yep.
A few trickle back and say, my bad, You. I was mad at you when you whooped out your Bible here in the middle of nowhere down there. But now you were right.
So what happens, Jay, when some seed winds up on the road?
If I don't run that harrow, get over that seed and cover it up, and we've all seen it, a swarm of birds descend on it.
Oh, yeah.
And they will get every bit of it. So do not broadcast your seed without covering it up.
That's exactly right, which is his point. He uses that as the snatch away. It never gets a chance to even grow at all. Right?
We don't have a problem on planting on rocks, but we do have with a lot of kind of different water regimes. But that second person is rocky places. The man who hears the word once receives it with joy. Good night. That's it. I can get out of here alive. Mm-hmm. But since he has no root, the seeds are in the wrong spot. It lasts only a short time. When trouble or persecution comes, like what happened to me here 4 or 5 years ago, national news, some guy said, do you believe homosexual behavior is a sin? I quoted a verse that said it was. Don't be deceived. 1 Corinthians 6, 9 and 10. But I didn't give him 1 Corinthians 6, 9 and 10. I just quoted it. You know, don't be deceived. And I answered the guy's question. Well, you'd have thought if they did the same thing to me that they're doing right now to Gruden, just attack him and no matter what, attack him. So sinners begin to attack other sinners and they pass judgment on each other and it's just a free for all. Everybody accusing everybody else of sinning, sinning, sinning. You say, well, you ever done a little sinning in your life? It wasn't as bad as that. And there you go.
You were actually the original cancel attempt.
Yeah, they
cancel culture. It hadn't quite gotten going.
They cursed me and treated me like a dog. And I was sitting there thinking, the guy asked me a question. I just quoted him a Bible verse, but it took this bunch in America, the news media, 3 weeks to figure out it was a Bible verse.
You lost a lot of sleep over it too, didn't you?
Yeah.
No. I just thought, well, I just love them and move on. Don't hold against
What's
them.
Interesting is that anytime, like, if someone's wanting to do a hit piece about you or the family, that's what they lead with. Even now, all these years later, it's like, oh, well, this guy. Even the little bit I got in Massachusetts was just because I'm your son, because they don't know anything about me.
If
you know
Jesus
what I'm saying?
If Jesus performed miracles and healings, and they still hated his guts and were trying to kill him. I said, why would I want to rise up and try to make a big... The guy asked me a question. I gave him a Bible verse that answers the question, and I moved on. And I didn't go back. I never looked back at that. I said, well, they got sponsors that were sponsoring us, you know. They axed them, you know.
Right.
They tried their best to shut us down. But we just moved forward and said, Jesus number one, you know.
So the third one is the stuff that comes up around it, chokes it out, and is compared to the
lot of that
wealth or, you know, anything really that gets in the way.
Wealth or trials.
The seeds are choked out. Yeah, we see that. We see it when that undesirables come up in there, stone.
And you're trying to kill that off, but that's keep your good stuff,
we don't want coffee beans, but we do want millet.
That's
so
right.
What about it? And I said, spray it or whatever, but I don't like that spray. I don't trust it, you know.
Yeah.
So Stone said, well, we'll just bush hog the whole mess. I said, I don't know about that. They said, well, them button
So he volunteered
willows,
me to do it.
You know, the button willows, ducks don't eat them button willows, but the button willows are about 3 feet tall over there. And on a dare, they said, what do you think? I said, try it. So they bush hogged it. I looked after all they bush hogged all the undesirables. I looked at what replaced it and I said, that was a stroke of genius you boys come up with. Mm-hmm. I said, that worked.
Oh, but what I didn't tell him, a week after we bush hogged it, I went in there with the spray rig and sprayed all the undesirables so they wouldn't grow back.
Yeah. So you did it anyway. That's what happened. You got to turn it over, Dad. Next generation.
That's right.
That's it.
All right. Well, we're out of time. Chaz, good to have you. Always good to have Stone on. So keep planting. You get to that good soil. That's what we want.
Keep sowing that seed.
That's right.
That's exactly right.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed Podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube and be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.